Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's February 15, 2013, and this is episode 361. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MBP2. And we have a real treat in store for you today. I know that a lot of you are hungry for business-related information, and I don't get a chance to really talk about this myself very much, but today we have an hour-long chat with Corwin Hebert, who's David Duchemin's manager, basically. But he's also an accomplished author and a really, really sharp person when it comes to the creative side of business. So let's jump into the conversation with Corwin. Okay, so I'm very happy to be here today with Corwin Hebert, who's manager to David Duchemin and author of numerous books on creative business and management. And lucky for us, Corwin has agreed for me to record this conversation. So welcome to the show, Corwin.
Great. Hey, thanks, Martin. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I've been looking forward to this. We spoke about having a chat like this a while ago, and both of our schedules have been a bit hectic. So it's really nice to finally be here on Skype with you.
Excellent.
So what we're going to do, you've just released a couple of books. You've got one in the real world. I hope that's not an inappropriate way of saying it. It's a hard copy, a book that you can buy from Amazon called Living the Dream. And you've also just put out a second Craft and Vision ebook that is a follow-up to your first one, Growing the Vision Monger. So you've got two of those out now. And first of all, I wanted to talk about these books because, you know, I've almost got through them, and I'm very, very happy that someone is finally writing books for photographers or for the business side, for creative people. So let's talk about these a little bit. Can you give us a quick rundown on what Living the Dream is about?
Yeah, Living the Dream is a business book for creative people. So the subtitle is called Putting Your Creativity to Work and Getting Paid. Mm. And as we both know, being creative and being in the marketplace is hard work. It's not easily done. And so I wanted to take some of the mystery out of starting and growing a creative small business. So Living the Dream, the goal of the book is to help a creative person outline and focus on their target market and what they offer their target market, to tackle some of the business planning aspects, to the elements of building rapport with people you want to generate money from. I tackle some of the things like financial and legal risk. And then I get into some of the marketing stuff, some of the, you know, the really what creative people would think would be the fun stuff, but, you know, to take it from a business standpoint, to look at how to get people curious and to generate demand for your work, building a marketing plan, building a sphere of influence of people instead of just networking and self-promoting. How can you build genuine relationships that develop the success of your business, and then when you're getting online, how to approach your web world in a way that actually attracts buyers. So I really, the scope of Living the Dream is really, really big. Mm. I try to accomplish a lot, but that's because I believe creative people have a lot of questions and they have a lot of concerns about how they're going to, you know, pay bills, how they're going to generate money, and how are they going to build a business for the future. A lot of creative people start with a, you know, kind of a freelance idea, like, hey, I just want to do this more. But then they start getting paid. They start sort of developing a reputation. They want to do it more, and it's hard work. So I want to help them get there with some of those aspects.
Yeah, from what I've read so far, you've certainly achieved that. It's turning into a little bit of a Bible for the photographer or for creative people. I'm going to keep saying photographers. I know I am, because it's my angle, but, you know, any creative person was obviously going to benefit from reading these books. But you put a bit of emphasis through both books, and also in the interviews that you do in Growing the Vision Monger too. You talk a lot about being, or not so much surround. The way I would say it is surrounding yourself by other creative people. How important do you think it is for people to sort of to communicate and build real relationships with other creative people rather than just the promotion side that you were talking about?
Yeah, I think it's imperative in both Living the Dream and my latest ebook, Growing the Vision Monger too. I highlight the importance of creative people not being kind of isolated, not being stuck in their own, stuck in their basement or stuck in their own creative world. Because what happens is that stagnant, when your creativity becomes stagnant and your inputs go down and you're not pushing the creative envelope and you're not experiencing the joys of, of collaboration, whether that's just by, support of other people or the energy to sort of gather with friends and put a project together, you can lose touch. You can lose touch of the marketplace. You can lose touch of what's in demand, what's the need out there, and how to keep people, serviced. And then I also think that when you're as a creative person, when you stop the flow of inputs, you stop exposing yourself to new ideas, to new interests, to sort of that developing of not just your craft, but sort of the other things that make up who you are as an individual, what makes you unique. You can really fall flat when it comes to building new relationships and getting people excited. A lot of people are looking for that new marketing, angle. And sometimes it's like, if you're not an interesting person, if you're not pushing the creative envelope and you're not being a part of the creative community within your target market, within your sort of your local area even, it just means that you're going to be out of touch. And so I think it's really important.
Yeah, I can't agree more. It's I remember in my business life, before I was doing photography as the only way to feed myself and my family, I was in a business environment, and I always felt as though, especially if I could get to visit other offices and meet people that I'd never met before in person, you feed off them incredibly, as from a business side. And now, while I'm taking groups of people to various places around the world, and I because of the sort of person that comes on the tour, I always get really fired up with just and really I get a lot of influence and inspiration from the group that I work with. I mean, I'm there as supposedly the instructor, but you can't fail to be around other photographers that do a great job of what they're doing and actually be inspired by what they're creating as well. And, but I think because, I'm not a working photographer, as in I don't do that many assignments where someone says, we need this to be photographed, you come and do it and we'll pay you X amount of money. The majority of my business plan is built around the tours and around the, actually teaching photography rather than doing it as an assignment photographer. So I don't get the sort of the daily access or exposure to a lot of other creative people. It's more for me when I actually get out in the field. So the flip side of that is that I do feel a little bit as though I get out of touch when I'm just stuck in my office all of the time. I noticed in one of your books you said just give yourself a task to get up and get out and out of the house in the morning. And that rang really true with me, because some days I get up and I'm at the computer. I'll maybe do a little bit of work in the studio, do a few things, but I'm often just doing the business side from morning until evening, and it can drain you a little bit.
Like when people say to me that they're not good with networking, they're not good at that type of relational marketing, then usually the best, sort of solution to that is, you know, it's probably because you're not exposing yourself to people enough. And the best way to get around that is plan your errands and your meetings for first thing in the morning to get you out of the house, to get, you know, and it might even be personal meetings, right? It might be personal appointments. It doesn't matter. Book that stuff first thing in the morning to kind of get you out, to get you wearing, you know, proper clothes, not your pajamas or, you know, you just rolled out of bed, right? And that's the one of the challenges of a freelancer or a creative independent life is that you can get really casual with yourself, and you might not be a very good boss to yourself if you sort of treat your work like that. So get up, get out of the house, and get working and being around people. And it's amazing how that can spark things like coffee meetings, that can spark things like sharing personal projects with someone. And ultimately, if you were to, you know, in those relationships, start putting together, say, a collaboration or a connection in some way, then you can really start to explore creative ideas and ultimately get to know other people. And that's where self-promotion comes into play, when, you know, you're spreading the word about what you're doing, and you're doing it to people who haven't heard you say it 150 times. And that's a real challenge for a lot of people, is they feel like they're hitting the same people, over the head 100 times because, they're so used to hearing them. So, your business model is a photography education model, right?
Mm, yeah.
And a lot of photographers aren't at that point where, you know, they should be educating others. It's their role. Why they entered the marketplace isn't to teach. It's for that service. It's that photography as a service, or photography as an art form. And so the way in which that business gets organized and marketed, you know, it has to be an expression of who they are, what they're most excited about, what really excites them, what stories they want to tell. And the marketing of that, it's hard. It's always hard.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, the thing with me is that I knew from the start that I wanted to always be the sort of photographer that people would look at my work and want to go with me to the places that I go to shoot them. And so for me, being a good photographer, you talk a lot in your books about honing your craft and making sure that you actually are on top of your game. And without that, I think none of it's possible. But once you get to the point where you, and we never get to the, we never reach the goal, but once you get past a point where your work is good enough to be able to inspire others, then I think you've got a number of different avenues that you should explore. And probably, you know, this is kind of going to be a question as well, but I mean, I haven't only built my business around the tours. I've got a number of things that I do. And I, you know, from a business perspective, it's always important to have multiple revenue streams, if possible. So relying on one particular form of revenue can be dangerous. So, I mean, do you agree with that? Would you normally try to get people to figure out how to generate multiple revenue streams?
Yeah, you know, a lot of emerging creative talent, you know, they would love the problem of, you know, only having one really good revenue stream.
Yeah.
The reality is that when your money comes from one big client or from just one part of the market, you are susceptible to, you know, the ebbs and flows of normal business. You know, people change, businesses change. I don't think it's hard to remember what happened in 2008 when suddenly, you know, the credit crunch hit and you know, people stopped spending, and sometimes they stopped spending because their budgets were gone, or sometimes there was just fear, there was just concern. And, you know, and that situation showed a lot of people the, you know, the challenge of marketing money, for example, is usually the money that dries up the quickest, or expendable, you know, kind of vacation money kind of gets set aside or doesn't get spent when, you know, there's worries. So multiple revenue streams are definitely required. In fact, I was talking with a business friend of mine who we were looking at revenue streams for creative people, and he was just reminding me, you know, creative people think that their business is built on being creative for hire. In reality, you're not building a creative business, you're building revenue streams, and your creativity is just one of the ways that you service that. So for as often as people want to try to create interesting business offerings, you really want to create as much diversity in the way in which you generate revenue so that you can deal with those ebbs and flows without it being so personal. Mm. And creative people take, you know, a loss of a contract or a loss of a renewal or someone not coming back or someone saying no to your proposal, and they take it personal. And the reality is that, you know, it's business. It's, you know, every decision is personal. Sometimes it is. And, you know, independent creative people, when they are marketing their work, really they're marketing themselves as much as their creativity, because there's a lot of trust that happens when there's an exchange for money. But all that to say is, when there's an alternate revenue stream in your work, you can say, hey, you know what? I get that. I understand there, you know, okay, this part of my business, it's going to be a little bit quieter right now. Well, that gives me a little bit more time to focus on other revenue streams that seem to be working. And again, it could be education. It could be fine art. It could be other aspects that are maybe aren't isolated exactly on the same thing that your other revenue streams are connected to, but it's part of your personality, it's part of your expertise, and you're kind of being creative with where your revenue is coming from. So yeah, I agree. I think that creative people should always push the envelope on where their money comes from. And that's why I'm not too worried about the day job or the part-time job. And, you know, creative people are always wanting to go pro, like making this giant leap into full-time creative work. The reality is that paying all of your bills plus is very difficult to do, and that takes a lot of revenue. And you know, for people that are worried, like I want to quit my day job. Well, you can do that, but wow, what an unbelievable strain on your creative work. You know, some people shouldn't wish for that too quickly. They should enjoy the process of getting there and not pushing it too quickly.
Absolutely. I mentioned in a recent podcast, because it's been about 3 years, just over 3 years now since I left my nice comfortable day job to do this, solely make a living solely from photography, and the peripheral activities. But I mentioned that recently, and someone on Google Plus, a guy that we have a lot of great interaction, he said, "Wow, I didn't realize it had only been a couple of years. How did you do it?" And so I had to then explain that for me, it would be scary for me to think that people would believe that you could make a success of this in just a couple of years. Because the truth is that I spent four and a half, 5 years working really hard to build a brand and to build a circle of people that would possibly help to support me or throw me bones. Once I had taken the leap. And so, I mean, I'm really in the 10th year when you add it all up. It's at least 8 years since I started to really build the brand that I'm using right now. So I always say to people, you know, do whatever you can while you've still got that day job, and do it until the day job starts to be badly or, you know, negatively affected by what you're trying to build up on the photography side. And that was the catalyst for me, really. Once I got to it, or the tipping point, once I got to the point where I knew that I was starting to protect my time for photography, to the, you know, the ill effect of having my business side start to go down a little bit, then I thought, okay, now it's time to make the jump. But also, of course, the revenue. I needed to know that I was already generating enough revenue to know that once I made the leap and had more time to work on the business side of the photography, then it would probably, over a couple of years, build to a point where it would support me. So, yeah, I mean, just starting from a position where jumping into it with nothing is suicide.
Yeah, there's an illustrator in San Francisco. Her name is Jessica Hish, and she coined the phrase procrasto-working.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was while she was doing her day job, she would sort of, you know, push her day job duties off to the side of her desk and, you know, loved working on side projects and other stuff for clients. Inevitably, it meant that her work day was like 17 hours long to get all of the work done for her day job and for her other, you know, side projects and freelance clients. But it's because she would push you know, the work she didn't want to do to the end of the day when she was tired, she or exhausted or fried, she would work on, you know, well, the non-important stuff, but the important stuff got her best energies. And, you know, when you have a day job that can handle those, that variable, you know, of your energy or your schedule or your enthusiasm or your workload, you know, that's ideally. Now, not everyone's day job is that flexible where they can handle, you know, those ebbs and flows. But the reality is that there's a bit of a moonlighting scenario that needs to happen. And most creative people are really uncomfortable with that. I as a business manager, I like to encourage them to get a little bit more comfortable with it, because the support that a day job or a part-time job or other revenue, you know, non-creative revenue, if you want to call it that, that creates that buffer for your creativity and for those margins. And yes, it can be overwhelming when it comes to your schedule sometimes, but create the buffers that you can. And sometimes that financial buffer, it makes all the difference in those early years.
Absolutely. And we're kind of touching on there as well. Another thing that you talk about, you said working 17 hours, and that's with the day job. When I quit my job, I expected that I would have more time to do the photography stuff. But the reality is that when you're doing this as a business, especially with just you and maybe a partner or something, you've got a lot of responsibilities and business side activities that you have to fulfill. So I've found that I'm working a lot harder now than I was when I still had the day job and I was doing the photography part time. And the thing that you mention a lot in your books is that it's hard work, you know, to do this. You can't expect to just jump in and become a successful photographer overnight. You've got to really work hard to build something. And yeah, I mean, what do you think about, have you got any comments surrounding that? Because I know it's something that you've touched on.
Yeah, I mean, creativity is hard work. It should be hard work. The marketplace expects that creativity is difficult to produce, especially on demand. So for, you know, photographers that are for hire, you know, the expectation of the marketplace is, you know, we can't do this ourselves. We need we need someone who knows what they're doing to pull this off and to really make, you know, these images, you know, sing for us. And so the effort that goes into building a business to meet those needs, I mean, that's the blood, sweat, and tears of it all. And I applaud the creative people that, you know, put their freelance or their small business idea on their shoulders and, you know, day and night, you know, whether it's in notepads or on their computer or it's in the weekends, it's in the margins of their mental energy and of their schedule that they hammer it out to get it done right as best they can. You know, that is a commendable thing. So I think that if someone, for example, has been, you know, they've been a working photographer for a while, they do it in the margins and they see someone young or someone new suddenly get some success and, you know, it's easy to become bitter or frustrated. You know, and I often hear, you know, the excuse, oh, well, that person knows so-and-so, or that person got a lucky break or whatever. The reality is that you're probably right. They probably did get a break or they probably did know someone. So who do you know? Mm-hmm. And what opportunity can you make for yourself, you know, in the next little while? And it's really about you just rolling up your sleeves and doing what you can. And you're right. I think that if people can, you know, if photographers can have a mindset of, well, I'm going to take a long game approach to this. It's not a flash in the pan. It's not about what gigs can I book tomorrow? What work can I get, you know, next week? It's really about, you know, next month. It's about next quarter. It's about next year. And kind of take a longer approach. One's creativity won't be so strained and one's finances won't be so, you know, angst with credit cards building up or whatever. And you know, you can enjoy the process a lot more, because as soon as a photographer really stops, you know, honestly loving making photographs, they very quickly become useless to the very people they think they can serve.
And look is always going to be a part of it. And, you know, in the photograph, in, you know, actually in the field, you've got to be lucky sometimes that the sun comes out or the sun goes in or the big clouds roll over and stuff like that. But with the photograph, if you're not there, if you don't do the hard work to actually get yourself in the field and be there ready for it and have the technical skills to capture the image the way you want to, it's not going to happen. And I think the same goes for the, you know, for the breaks that we get. I feel incredibly lucky to have been invited to write for Craft and Vision with you and David. And I know that part of that, there's probably people out there saying, oh yeah, well, he was lucky. He knows David. The only reason that I got invited was because of the hard work that I'd put in to actually get myself out there and start to build a brand and start to get known. Because if I'd not done that hard work and laid the foundations, then David would never have heard of me anyway. So, you know, it all comes back down to even if there's an aspect of luck in there involved, what's that? There's an old adage. It's like luck favors the hard worker or something like that. Yeah. Exactly. You've got to work for it. So,
yeah.
But before we move on, one other thing that I did want to say is that and this is really just to clarify for the listeners, but although I've said it's hard work, I've never been happier in my life in what I'm doing than I am now. And even though I'm working from the moment I get up until the moment I go to bed, maybe with a couple of, maybe one movie and a few beers intermingled in there through the week. But apart from the odd time when I will just sit down and grab a beer and watch a movie, it's just work, work, work. But I almost feel bad calling it work because I enjoy it so much. Even the business side, say we have someone on like a retainer who's basically doing all of our accounting, but I have to go and work with him each month and he teaches me the business side. And, you know, running a corporation here in Japan means that I have to know a lot of stuff about the business side and all of the forms we have to submit and all of that. But I'm really enjoying actually learning about that aspect. And I think that it's making me more valuable as a businessman. And, you know, even if all of this fell through, I'd probably be able to get a better job somewhere else if, you know, with all of what I now know. So learning about the business side is really enjoyable for me as well.
Being a creative entrepreneur is like being a creative student, right? You're always learning from the creativity side, and you're always learning on the business side. And you know, you mentioned the weirdness around a work-life balance that doesn't really exist, and that's because you're creative, and your job is to be creative and to share that creativity with other people and create opportunities for them to also be creative. So, you know, it's a great problem to have when you're, you know, the work you do is just, it's who you are. It's part of your personality. It's part of your nature as a humanoid, and you can't really separate the two. And that's, I think a lot of people would look at the work that you're doing kind of going, yeah, he is lucky, because he gets to have that sort of work-life, you know, mashup that, you know, that a lot of people crave. And I think that you said it, you took years to build that. That didn't just happen overnight.
Mm, yeah. But for now, I mean, although it's still a lot of hard work and I still have to wonder how I'm going to be paying the rent for the next few months sometimes, I do really, and I'm going to say something really corny here, but I do really feel as though I'm living the dream. So it's been great to get through at least most of the way through your book. I'm looking forward to finishing that. And I should also mention that I'll put some links to your book in the show notes for today. And the blog post will be at mbp.ac/361. So if people are interested, come along and check that out, and I'll put links to everything that we talk about in that blog post. And before we continue with the second half of the conversation with Corwin, I'd just like to remind you that this episode is brought to you by squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. Squarespace gives you and your website users the best mobile experience. Squarespace have developed new templates with mobile-ready responsive designs, which means that your site automatically restructures and looks great on any brand of smartphone, tablet, or computer. When you add an image to your site, seven different versions are created so that the correct side loads for the device. so your site looks professionally designed no matter how it's viewed. It has beautiful templates with 100% drag and drop functionality for all customization tools. There are new page builder tools called the Layout Engine that enable you to customize pages in seconds by adding blocks of content such as photos, videos, text, social media content, and immediately preview the layout as you go. This makes it even easier for anyone to build a site. You can automatically import, sync, and publish to and from social media with a few clicks, dynamically refreshing your site content and raising awareness in your social circles. For example, automatically pull photos from Instagram into your site, instantly sync pages and galleries to Facebook, auto-publish new blog entries on Twitter. Social media buttons to connect with all of the services that you love through Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, Foursquare, Dropbox, LinkedIn, Pinterest, StumbleUpon, and more. Squarespace has award-winning design team and user experience experts. They created a whole new set of sophisticated design templates that reflect modern web style using highly intuitive navigation. Each template has hundreds of customization options available to change grid layout, color, over 300 fonts, and more. Squarespace integrates all of your website needs, domains, design, development, hosting, and customer support. It's a unified service, making it faster and easier than ever to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial, go to squarespace.com, sign up for a free account. No credit card is needed, just try it out and start building your website. Then, if you decide to purchase it, use the offer code MBP2 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. And this includes monthly or annual plans. So if you like it, and I know you're going to, you'll save more money going for the annual plan. So that's squarespace.com and use the offer code MBP2. Everything's there for you to create an exceptional website. And now back to our conversation with Corwin. You also, we mentioned that you've just released also a follow-up to Growing the Vision Monger. Can you tell us a little bit about that book?
Yeah, so the first Growing the Vision Monger book, it was a bit of a follow-up to David Duchemin's print book called Vision Mongers. Mm. The idea of, you know, making a life and living, you know, from photography. So I wrote an ebook as sort of a, you know, kind of picking up on that conversation and kind of saying, you know, what are some things that a business manager could teach a photographer about growing their own photography business? So, you know, I am not a photographer. I am the worst photographer you'll ever meet. David often refers to me as someone that doesn't know the difference between a f-stop and a bus stop. So I know I'm pretty dangerous person. In fact, this last trip David and I were on, I was helping him as sort of a bit of a producer and an assistant. Even though I'm his business manager, I kind of came along for the trip. I'm also good friends with him. And he gave me a video camera to, you know, capture some behind the scenes footage. Well, 3 weeks later, you know, we're back home and he looks at the footage and he goes, yeah, that'll be the last time I give you a camera to do anything. I mean, I'm really horrible. And, you know, I set the expectations low. But so when I started writing ebooks for Craft and Vision, you know, my role there when it comes to content for photographers is to say, hey, if you are putting your photography out there for, you know, for service, for people to give you money to either buy your work or to hire you to do work for them, I have some things to say about how you go about building your business, how you go about managing it, how you handle yourself as a freelancer, as a small business owner, operator, and how you market it. You know, how do you spread the word about, you know, what you do and how you do it, and how do you get people excited about wanting to hear more about your prices, more about, you know, the work that you do, how you can help them. So Growing the Vision Monger, you know, one, if you will, was sort of the beginning of that conversation. then just a few months ago, a month ago, I put out Growing a Vision Monger too, because I wanted to carry on that conversation. I wanted to talk a little bit more kind of in the context of what other photographers are saying. So I picked up the phone and I called Wonderful Machine. They're an agency based in the United States. And I kind of said, hey, I'd like to talk with some of your representative photographers and just ask them some candid questions about what's it like for them to, you know, from if they were to do it all over again, what would they do? What's it like making money? What's it like keeping clients happy? So all the way through Growing the Vision Monger 2, there's interviews with, you know, photographers that are doing it, that are, you know, making a living, making photographs. And I really wanted to provide some sort of like context to my business marketing advice with, here's what photographers are saying. So it was a really, really fun ebook project. And when it came out in mid-January, it was literally the day before I got on the plane to fly to Kenya. And, you know, I had no idea, you know, it had been 3 years since my last, you know, Growing the Vision Monger book. So I wasn't quite sure where it was at. But, you know, there's an unbelievable desire out there right now for people to take these, you know, amazing cameras that they have in their hands and to do something for, you know, the sake of starting a small business. So it's been really fun to sort of see what questions and concerns and worries and you know, problems I can solve for people with their business and marketing issues.
Yeah, it's really enlightening to go through and read it's basically just for the listeners here as well. All of these interviews they're set out in mostly two pages. Well, three, I guess, because you've got a photo from the photographer as well. But then it goes into a number of pretty much set questions that Corwin asks the photographer each time. But they all give a totally different view of what they should have done better and what they do well that they think that is really contributing to their success. But there's a theme that runs through it, and I'm not going to give too much away here. You should run out and buy it. It's like $5. It's a no-brainer. So we won't give too much away. But really, it's the way you've read it out, the way you've laid it out. It's like you've got little gems on each page, and I'm really enjoying working through the book.
Cool. Yeah. One of the things I love about it is that there's not only themes between each of the photographers, but there's also, you know, real. There's some contrasting, you know, ideas and. I love the fact that, you know, there's not one way to get this done. There's not one way to, you know, to make it. You know, everyone kind of approaches their creative work, their photography in the way that they, you know, can do best at the time or that they know how at the time. And, you know, there isn't a magic formula. So I was glad to be able to show that and kind of just say, you know what, it seems like a lot of photographers are looking, you know, to sort of find that recipe for success. You know, a lot of people that are successful, they ground it out themselves. They figured it out their own way based on their own relationships, based on their own unique passions or personalities or opportunities or, you know, barriers to, you know, whether it's just amazing to see that. So I enjoyed seeing both the, you know, what there was in common and what there wasn't.
Yeah, it's great stuff. So yeah, as again for the listeners, I'm going to put a link to this, and there's a bundle you can buy both Growing the Vision Monger and 2, the second part, for just $8. So really, these are no brainer. It's less, or for each book, it's less than the price of a coffee. So do grab those. But let's jump on. I've got a couple of questions for you that I wanted to ask. Firstly, how did you get started doing what you do?
That's a good question. Can I say made it up? professional answer. You know, I mean, my business is that I'm a business manager for creative entrepreneurs. And so really what that means is that my wife, Eileen, and I have a business called Tandem Agency. And, you know, we help our creative clients focus on what they do best. That's creativity, right? Our clients focus on being creative, and we take care of the business stuff. So, you know, we take the stuff that, you know, doesn't, you know, go into the creative part. So there's so many other aspects to starting and growing a creative, a successful creative small business. And we like to help our clients take care of those things. So, you know, over the few years that that I've done it, I mean, it's looked a lot of different ways, you know, and I'll answer your question honestly. I came into independent work about 8 years ago, and a real passion for event production and event marketing. And, you know, I definitely consider myself creative in a lot of ways. And I found the type of investment that I could put into event planning and event production sort of tapped into a lot of my interests, and a lot of the aspects of my creativity and my organization kind of fell into, you know, fell into a good mix working with events. And I could hire creative people, and I could, you know, get things done with clients. And I really enjoyed that experience. But after about 3-4 years, I kind of realized that in the end, it was the working with the creative people that I enjoyed the most, the actual, like, you know, hosting events. Well, it's a lot of work. I was tired of, you know, dealing with, you know, the actual event part, if you will, but the production part I loved, and the organizing part I really loved. At that same time, my friendship with David Duchemin, you know, we were getting closer and closer as good friends, and his business, his photography business, was kind of really, it was really changing. You know, there was a lot going on. He had his first print book out. He was getting a lot of demands on his time. And so, you know, we were not only good friends, but we were sort of, you know, business buddies, you know, like sidekicks. We would sort of, you know, chime in on each other's businesses, give advice or support. And, you know, I was tapping on his shoulder for favors. He was doing the same for me. And one time he was going on a trip on a photography assignment, and he knew he was going to be offline for a couple of weeks. And so he asked me a favor. He's like, you know, could you watch my inbox and just, you know, respond kindly to, you know, people's inquiries saying, you know, David's away, you know, he'll get back to you as soon as he's back. He didn't want to do the, you know, the autoresponder. He wanted touch. So I said, yeah, no problem. I'll, you know, forward those emails to me, you know, automatically from your server, and I'll take care of that for you. He came back from his trip, and I kind of said, you know what, I'm not going to give you your inbox back. Might be best for me to continue doing this. And that freed him up. Instead of worrying about all these emails and queries and questions and people wanting a piece of him, he just said, you know, I'm going to focus on the ones that you've, you know, escalate to me, and let's just work together on that. So that grew from there. And, you know, as his business grew, as the demands of whether it was, you know, clients or, you know, readers or customers, you know, came to him, they actually ended up just coming to me, and then I just fielded it from there. So, you know, now David's able to focus on, you know, making photographs and writing as he does so well. And, you know, I handle aspects like the publishing company, which is Craft and Vision. So I take care of a lot of the aspects of Craft and Vision, as well as other aspects of his business, deal with accountants and lawyers and contractors, and kind of keep the operation going so that if he's like, you know, going to be joining you, you know, off the grid in Hokkaido, he can do that knowing that his business is running and making money and keeping everyone and everything happy. So it's been a process of about 8 years, and been doing what I've been doing for about 4 or so. So it's been a really fun process to get where I am now.
Wow. It sounds incredible. And you've actually just answered a good part of one of the questions that I had a little bit further down the list, which was, as a photographer, what are the benefits of having a manager? And what should a photographer do to try and hook up with one? So obviously, I mean, you've just answered a lot of that about what you do for David. Is there anything else that we want to add there? Or shall we jump onto the second part of this question about, you know, what a photographer should do to get one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can probably answer, you know, that in both those questions in sort of one long answer, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I mean, the benefits of having a business manager is that your creativity as a photographer and your ability to make photographs that you really understand how you made them, and that your creative investment and your relationship as sort of the artist and your relationship as the, you know, as the person that's really getting hired, that takes a lot of energy. When you can focus on that, you know, ultimately you become more valuable, right? Mm. You become a better commodity in the marketplace. When you have that level, you can really focus on your expertise and focus on what you know really well. So it's sort of, in a lot of ways, it's about removing distraction, and it's about removing the things that, you know, really just don't make the biggest difference to your ability to generate value and revenue. So, you know, it comes down to, you know, focusing on what you do best. That's one benefits. And the other one I find, and what I've experienced, is that making the most of a business opportunity, that can be done so much better when there's help, when there's someone that can, you know, massage a relationship or ask some of the hard questions or push back and sort of say, you know, this isn't really looking like, you know, the way we had discussed. Let's go about this again. And, you know, as a business manager, I get to sort of play good cop and bad cop, depending on what my clients need. And it means that I can sort of be that go-between. I can sort of deal with some of those bits. And when a photographer has someone in their back pocket that isn't just someone that they delegate to, and that's commonly what happens, is a photographer starts getting busier or they feel like they need some help. So what do? They bring on, you know, an assistant, or they bring in someone that they can delegate work to. The problem is that then you're just delegating, you're managing someone, and you're having to you know, with work, and you end up kind of doing a lot of the work yourself. And you would never put that person in a room with a client necessarily. You wouldn't have them dealing with a lot of those things. So as a business manager, I get to have those big conversations. I get to have those opportunities I get to make those opportunities where, you know, my client can come in and sort of be the, okay, now the photographer's here. He's going to address the things that he knows best. And then the client slides the contract across the table and I take the contract and I say, I will review this. And, you know, the photographer and I will get back to you with our comments or concerns. And I get to sort of play that middleman. So photographers definitely can benefit from, you know, focusing on their own creativity. And when it comes to making the most of an opportunity, that there's, you know, that opportunity has creative benefits and it has business benefits. And sometimes it's good to have a business mind help with those bits. So when it comes to finding a manager, I have to say that, you know, one of the things I've really enjoyed about, you know, my experience is that, you know, there's not a lot of resources out there. So on the first step, you know, if a photographer can find someone within their own network, a friend, someone that's got some, you know, a business mind, a marketing mind that has a little bit of time on the side, you know what? If you can build that relationship up as either a collaboration or as a bit of a contracting thing, and sort of, you know, you're not delegating photography work, you're not delegating, you know, I need you to, you know, edit images. I need you to, it's other stuff. It's some of the business stuff. That might be a great way to start. I mean, again, that's how David and I started. So, you know, maybe someone in a photographer's life that can sort of pick up the slack, and that it's stuff that they enjoy. It's not, you know, grunt work. It's that they enjoy the business stuff of the creative work. Instead of that, you know, there are a lot of people out there that operate like agents or reps. More often than not, an agent or a rep is involved in the soliciting side, sort of the, you know, bringing business in the door, and that is great, and that it can be a really valuable role. In fact, you know, there's room in my business structure to have agents involved with my clients. I am not an agent. I don't solicit on behalf of my clients. So there's lots of room for lots of different kinds of people. And if a photographer is fairly organized, feels like they've got a handle on the business stuff, you know, then maybe an agent or a rep is the right person to get involved with their work. That agent or rep will take a commission off, you know, work one, but they don't usually generate a cost to a photographer if there's not new business coming in. So, you know, if people were to Google search for their area or for their country or their state or province, you know, who are the photography reps in the area or agents, you know, it's always worth, you know, reaching out to them and showing your portfolio, and hopefully an agent or rep will find, you know, you of value. But as a business manager, I don't work on commission. It's sort of, I make the, you know, I have my rates, and it's sort of, it is what it is. And if my clients suddenly get really, really rich, well, I don't get rich off them. But when my, you know, if there's gaps between revenue, then my clients have to decide if, you know, if my role is, you know, is important to maintain. So it's sort of, it's one of those ebbs and flows that comes into it. But yeah, I don't have an answer about where to really find business managers for photographers, other than, you know, tapping on a local friend, you know, someone that can roll up their sleeves with you. It's good to see that way anyway.
Well, that sounds exactly the way you did it with David, and I guess that comes back to the networking part that we talked about as well, the importance of that, because you're not going to meet someone that you might end up partnering with, like you and David have, if you're not out there. So,
agreed.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll do a couple of these three things lists. So, what are three things that you think photographers should do to become more successful?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, ultimately, you can only do so much. So, you know, having a list of three is probably a good way to go. I think the number one thing is you have to push your creativity. And a lot of people think it's weird that a business manager would start with talking about creativity. Like, what would I have to say about it? But the reality is that your ability to market your photography is really rooted in your talent. It's rooted in your craft and how well you know it, how well you push the envelope. And when you are pushing your own personal creativity, you're making waves. You will find it easier to do what you do when you're feeling that angst and that push and that drive to try new things. So that creative envelope is imperative, that it's pushed all the time. I think that getting organized is so important, whether it's your digital files, whether it's your paperwork, whether it's having good, clear, simple invoices, whether it's dealing with your taxes in such a way that, you know, you've got accordion files with, you know, envelopes with, you know, you're organizing your receipts so you're not dealing with a giant shoebox. When it comes to planning out a shoot, you know, do you have an organized checklist that you can bring over from your previous shoot so that you don't have to keep replicating the work? Finding things to kind of make systems. Those little bits, I would love it if photographers would take like camera-free weeks, you know, like 1 week a year, put the camera down and focus on everything that has, you know, anything to do with the things that require no camera whatsoever or no computer even if you have to do it that way. But there's things that need to get organized that have nothing to do with making photographs, and those things cause stress. So if you're looking to be successful, you want to remove the barriers to being stressed, and that's one of them, is to get organized. So I think it's a big thing. And then the third thing about, you know, when it comes to being more successful as a photographer, I think you have to make people curious. And there's a lot of people wanting to, you know, they want to spread the word, they want to be good self-promoters, they really want to, you know, get people to see their work. But if they're not making photographs and doing things as a creative human that, you know, get people curious in what they're doing, then really you're just jamming stuff down people's throat. You're kind of begging and pleading and, you know, pay attention to me, look at my work. And it that doesn't get people excited. So whatever it is, whether it's based on your interest level, you know, your hobbies, or it's, you know, the subject matter of your work, or it's the style or the aesthetic of your portfolio, and then ultimately, you know, an image that you share, you know, get people curious, make people kind of go, like, what? Like, I need to learn more about this person, this image, this photograph, whatever it is. It's, you know, pushing the envelope of curious making is probably a better way to approach one's marketing than anything else.
Three pieces of golden advice right there. So what are the three things that photographers should stop doing to be more successful?
That's a great question. I think that, you know, kind of to jump off an earlier comment, is that if you could stop as a photographer, if you were to stop treating your email inbox like your system, you know, like your get organized system, I think that a person like that would gain a lot, because what happens is people treat their inboxes like, you know, like it's their thing. It's how they stay organized. It's how they keep track of people and things and projects and things that they want to accomplish. And they might even feel like they're going to get organized. They're going to organize, you know, mailbox folders and flags. And if you treat your inbox like your organizing system, it means that your project information, your shooting information, the relationship that you're trying to build, all that information, all those opportunities, all those human contacts are all in the worst possible place that they could be. inboxes, email, I think is quite scary. I think it's a very dangerous tool because it can be so easily ignored or abused or misused. And so I really like to see people find and create systems that are outside of their inbox. It creates more opportunity for creativity, creates more opportunity to actually be organized in a way that's productive. So I think that's, for me, it feels like that's number one. Mm. The second thing would be to take a longer approach. And, you know, photographers have this insatiable desire with based on, you know, the latest, you know, Canon advertisement that says, you know, become a pro, buy this lens and become a pro. There's this sort of quick scheme mentality in a sort of going pro a type industry. And I really love to see photographers, you know, calm down, take a deep breath, and look at their creative work as something that's going to take them some time to develop those relationships, to hone their craft. So a longer approach would go really well. So if they were to sort of, if they were to stop that sort of that panic approach, it would go a long way. And then thirdly, I think that if a photographer stops pushing on their social networks, I think that they'll be more successful. I see a lot of photographers sharing, you know, sharing images, hoping for likes and on Facebook and hoping for retweets and looking at, they'll do a blog post and, or they'd make something happen on a social network and they're, how many, you know, forwards do I get? How many plus ones do I get? How many comments am I getting? And they're really pushing. They're sort of, they're not leaving much to the imagination, and the people that are looking at it kind of go, I get it. They're a photographer. They've got an image, making photographs, whatever. And it's a real sort of push marketing mentality. And really what that's doing is you're just making noise. So, you know, I'd like to encourage photographers to focus on making a difference or make people curious. Do the things that, you know, aren't so desperate looking. So that desperation needs to kind of, it would need to stop in order for someone, I think, to experience success. I don't know any successful photographer that hoard themselves out to their social networks, you know, 24/7. So I think photographers should spend half as much time on their social networks. I think they'll become better marketers. They'll become better people amongst the, you know, those that know them, like them, love them, or need to get to know them if they're spending less time, you know, on their social networks. So.
Again, three pieces of golden advice there, and I now feel happy that I don't get enough or I don't set enough time aside for the social networks, so I'm happy to hear that. So okay, one last question. What's it like being David Duchemin's manager? I was gonna say master there, or it may be both.
It's very clear. He is boss man. In fact, Eileen and I in our business tandem agency, we have a little sort of tagline that says, "You are Batman, we are Robin." Mm-hmm. David is definitely the boss man. Being David's manager is an absolute riot. And like I said earlier, I have the benefit of also being, you know, his closest friend. And, you know, so our connection, just like how you said, your work-life balance doesn't really exist because, you know, it's all great. It's all you love to live your life. My friendship with David and my working relationship with David are very much intertwined. So, you know, I have the benefit of, you know, opportunities to travel with him both for work and, you know, for fun. And, you know, he is so creative when he comes home from a trip. In fact, I always worry, like, his trip to Hokkaido with you, he's going to come back so inspired. It'll be his first trip to Japan. So he's going to come home and I know it's just going to spark ideas. And, you know, knowing him, it's going to be some new business idea or some new personal project. I mean, the guy is just jacked up with ideas all the time. So when he comes home from these trips that he takes so often, you know, he's so energized and I get a chance to, you know, I usually get one of the first downloads, right? You know, he's the one, you know, says we have to have a coffee meeting. You know, we have to talk. I got some ideas and he unloads on me. I double click the zip folder, if you will. And I all this stuff from him and it's so inspiring. I, you know, the, being his manager is I call it an epic ride. It's an epic adventure in both my creative life and my business life. So he really pushes me. You know, he moves really, really fast. And when he's got an idea, he wants to act on it really quickly. So I have to be ready. I have to, you know, get ready to get organized, or get ready to ask questions, or get ready to, you know, ask for favors, or, you know, tap on people's shoulders, or build a budget, or whatever it takes. So it's a real riot working with him. It's a work that I don't take for granted, and I really enjoy it.
Wow. Sounds like you're living the dream as well. So I want to just touch on one last thing before we close, and that's that, you know, a number of times during the last hour you've talked about photographers and creative people, and you often talk about them as like the other type of person. But I know from talking to you and from what you've done that although it might not be artistic creativity, the business sense and all of the stuff that you seem to do is incredibly creative in your own field. And so I don't think that there are many people in business that are as creative in the way they do things as you seem to be. So I think I just wanted to sort of clarify for the listener that creativity doesn't necessarily mean making something beautiful that's artistic. You know, anything, even from your event planning, I know that you were very creative in how you did all of that. So let's not think of creativity as just an artistic pastime or a career. It's when you listen to people like Corwin here, there's creativity all through that. So it's been a lot of fun talking with you this morning, or this evening for you.
Yeah, no, it's been really great, Martin, and I enjoy working with you as a Craft and Vision author and keeping tabs on the work that you do. And it's fun to see you, the way that you work to help other photographers enjoy their creative life and to enjoy the experience they have making photographs. It's really, really, really interesting.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun this morning and working with you through Craft and Vision as well. It's all good stuff. So maybe we're both living the dream, and we hope that a lot of other people can, through the stuff that we do, can get closer to their dream as well.
I agree. Sounds great.
Okay. Well, really, thank you very much for your time today, and I look forward to chatting again at some time.
You bet. Thanks, Martin.
Okay, so that's it. I had a lot of fun chatting with Corwin there for that hour. A couple of things before we finish. As we mentioned, I'm going off to Hokkaido again for the next 2 weeks. So I haven't had time to pre-record any episodes. But this is the second episode this week. So forgive me for not putting anything out while I'm away. I'll be back onto the podcast again. It's probably by around Monday or Tuesday in 2 weeks' time. And also, if you are a TWIP listener this week in photo, and if you're not, you should be. And I had the pleasure of hosting TWIP yet this week. And so it was, Frederick was busy, and so I jumped on as the host. Just three of us, including me, had a great conversation though. So that's up on thisweekinphoto.com right now. So take a listen to that. Also, as I travel with David and our group in Nagano for the Snow Monkeys and then Hokkaido over this next 2 weeks, I'm probably going to be loading images, maybe not daily, but relatively frequently onto Google Plus. I'll create an event and start to drop images in there. And as soon as the participants get online, we're going to be putting their images in there as well. So do take a look. The easiest way to find me on Google Plus is to just use the link mbp.ac/gplus, and that's GPLUS. We're going to have a blast, and I wish you were here, as they say, hopefully in future years. But for now, if you're not one of the other people that are joining David and I, then at least you can join us vicariously with the help of Google Plus. So really though, thanks very much for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google Plus and Twitter, and there are other places that I'm out and about online, and links to everything that I'm up to are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by and take a look. And I'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with another episode, but in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.